despite all the wild, turbulent market dynamics that we're seeing and inflation and things like that, it's still a great time to be a founder.
I'm Scott McGrew. Welcome to Sand Hill Road.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
And breaking news right now, the latest monthly inflation numbers are out. The consumer price index for June, including food and energy costs, rose 1.8% last month. It rose 9.1% since June of last year. That number is higher than forecast, which called for an 8.8% increase.
My office calendar, and yeah, I still use a paper calendar, has birthdays and meeting times and golf tee times scrawled on it. But today's date is just marked CPI day, the inflation numbers. Prices rose 9.1% from this time last year, way more than expected.
I am Bill Petty. I'm a partner at an investment advisory firm, Tercera.
I called Bill to see what advice he's giving his clients.
You know, inflation is not a dirty word. And so we encourage our portfolio companies to talk to their clients about inflation and ask them how they're dealing with it. Obviously, this needs to be done in the right way, at the right time. And you don't want to call a client out of the blue and lead with this. But if you're doing a good job of managing your most important client relationships, you can find a natural point to say, hey, John, hey, Jane, you know, how are you guys feeling the impact of inflation? And a lot of times they may say, yeah, it's really bad. And we're thinking about price increases, or we just passed price increases. And when they say that, they just open the door for the easiest, most natural point in time for you to raise the topic. So I think step one is just find the right opportunity to talk about it.
And when you're saying being delicate about it because you are going to raise prices on them.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the punchline, but it shouldn't feel controversial or adversarial. If you're talking to an enterprise client and they're saying that they're having to pass on price increases to their clients because their input cost, whatever it may be, if it's labor, if it's raw materials, if that's rising, they're going to have to pass on their price increases. Everybody's in the same boat here. And so it's finding ways to identify win-win conversations and win-win solutions.
Rate hikes, we're watching them. Doesn't seem like the Fed is going fast enough to catch up.
When you read the notes from each of the Federal Reserve members, they talk about this range of a Fed funds target rate of 2.5% to just over 3% as being neutral. It's not going to stimulate growth. It's not going to contract growth in the economy. Well, we're pretty far away from that right now. And that implies that there's quite a bit of movement still required to get to that neutral zip code. And if you follow the futures market at all, like I do, the futures market expects the federal funds rate to be at 2.8% by the end of the year.
What is it, inflation, that worries you most in your industry? What worries you most in your industry?
It's actually not inflation. And so we focus on investing in professional services businesses, what we call third wave cloud consultancies. And the biggest challenge that our portfolio companies face and that any company we meet with faces is talent. There is so much more demand for technology talent than there is supply. And inflation has an impact on the cost of that talent, but it's not the leading issue that we're talking about with our portfolio companies.
Do you see that solution coming anytime soon?
No. I think domestically, the technology talent market is going to be tight for a very, very long time, potentially a decade or more. One of the best solutions to the domestic talent shortage is embracing a global diversified delivery model. And so in each of our portfolio companies, we encourage them and offer a lot of assistance in opening up delivery centers in Latin America. And that's been a really successful and attractive avenue for us to date.
Yeah, I know. It's an interesting time.
Nathan Beckford, CEO at Foundersuite.
It's been so long that we've been in a low inflation environment that I don't know if the impact has really hit the startup market yet. Now, to be fair, a lot of startups are operating in virtual worlds. They don't have physical prices. We've got some that are making food products and things like that. So they're clearly being affected not only by inflation, but even the higher price of grain because of the Russia-Ukraine conflict and things like that, right? I mean, some of this stuff is impacting them. I don't think it's really hit the virtual goods, the metaverse startups, the SaaS startups. You know, only the labor portion is starting to impact a little bit. So I guess my point is, I don't think it's really hit yet. If this higher inflation continues, then we'll see it a few months from now, I think.
But even companies that aren't affected by inflation may be affected by its side effects. For instance, as Bill noted, the Fed raising interest rates to slow the economy. Theoretically, that should not affect the capital in venture capital. But VC worry about recession, Fed-driven or otherwise, just as any industry does. And then add to that a summer slowdown.
It's a stereotype, but it's not that investors go take off for 2 months to their villa in Italian Riviera or whatever, you know. It's not impossible. I have seen startups raise money. I think once you get into August, it becomes pretty much impossible. You know, fundraising does have some seasonality where a lot of fundraising happens right after all the investors get back from Burning Man. So right after Labor Day until, call it Thanksgiving, Christmas, there's a lot of deals happen. Christmas break happens, and then, you know, January 12th or something, when everyone's back from skiing at Tahoe, there's another wave of deal activity. So there is some seasonality to this. I don't know. Yeah.
Thing about stereotypes is sometimes they're true. Yes.
Yeah.
what other, having talked to 200 plus companies that have successfully raised money, what other don'ts are out there?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many. I think one of the don'ts is, this is kind of obvious, but maybe not to everyone, you know, don't do the spray and pray, right? There's, I see a lot of founders, like even on our platform, I get customers come and say, hey, I see in your database of investors, you get 10,000 SaaS investors. How do I blast a message out to all 10,000? Like, you don't, we're not going to allow that because that's not going to help you. That's going to hurt you. You're going to get your email flagged for spam. You're going to be, you know, on people's blacklist. You know, you don't want to do that, right? So that's one common don't I see folks make. Another is a little squishier, slightly less tangible, but I see founders all the time go out with just bad pitch decks. Like their deck, they'll send me their deck like, hey, can you just look at this, see if anyone comes to mind I should be talking to? I'm like, this deck is terrible. It's confusing. It's cluttered. I can't make heads or tails of this. And I'm giving you more attention because you're my customer and you're paying me. I'm giving you more attention span than an investor is, who's going to give you 30 seconds. They're going to flip through this thing. And if it doesn't hook them right away, they're not even going to look further, right? So that's another don't. And the converse to that is, make sure your pitch deck is absolutely amazing and you've practiced it with people, gotten feedback on it before you get out there and talk to investors.
Nathan, by the way, has a podcast. I mean, who doesn't? called How I Raised It.
We're up to like 230 some episodes. And it's literally just talking to founders who've raised money and unpacking how they did it. And believe it or not, even 230 episodes in, it's still pretty interesting. Like you hear 230 different ways startup founders have raised money. It's not as repetitive as you might think.
I don't number my podcast episodes. So I had to go on a computer screen and with my finger count up all of the episodes I've done. And I've come up with 84. So nice. By the time we run this, you'll be episode 86. But if I could sum up what I've learned in 84 episodes, it would be that people in venture invest in people first and ideas second. So they bet on the team, not the problem the team is trying to solve. Now, the downside of that, obviously, is that it ensures that the investment world can be insular, that they bet on people they already know, they pattern match, and that can be exclusionary. Sure. But if I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times, and that is people are betting on people and not ideas.
I think that's true, and especially true at the early stages, right? The angel, pre-seed, seed rounds. I would add to that a little bit. They're betting on the people and kind of the vision, right? What's this big, audacious vision that, you know, these people are putting in front of you? And then, of course, that changes over each successive round. It becomes more and more about, you know, the traction, the metrics, the financials. Obviously, as you get into later stage Series A, Series B, you know, it's really much more of a numbers driven thing that people are investing in. But yeah, absolutely. It's about the people and the vision and, you know, and about the pattern matching thing. I mean, I think there's definitely a bias to that, right? I read a statistic not too long ago, 40% of all VCs went to either Stanford or Harvard, right? 40% of the entire universe, and they're clearly looking at other Stanford grads to invest in. However, I've seen a ton of emerging venture fund managers sprout up in the past 2 years that are focused on, you know, gay and lesbian or people of color. I mean, Hispanic. I mean, literally every vertical category. Now has a couple venture funds kind of pursuing that, which I think is interesting. So there's definitely a broader set of investors to pattern match, you know, with. So I think
speaking of patterns, what have you noticed in your 200 plus episodes that if you could say, well, if there's one lesson to be learned here, it's this.
Yeah. So there is obviously a selection bias in this, right? 230 founders, they've all raised money. That's how they got on the show. So they've all been successful in that. I'd say some of the patterns or maybe the biggest pattern I would say, you said one, but I'm going to say two. I'd say one is they're all pretty good at hustling. Like everyone on the show, you know, even if they aren't a natural extrovert, they're good at sales and they're good at getting out there and talking to investors and getting out there and talking to a lot of investors, right? Very few people on my show came and said, oh, we talked to 6 investors and 3 of them wrote a check. Most of them talked to a healthy number of investors and kind of, you know, had a good sales bone in their body. The other thing I would say is they're also good at relationship building. Almost, I'd say 80% of the founders on the show had spent 6 months, 12 months prior to raising money, building and nurturing relationships with investors before going out to raise money. And that's something I don't think gets enough airtime is, you know, the more relationships you can build well in advance. Like some of them, one of the founders I was thinking was working at a startup as, call it revenue officer or something like that, but he was very conscientiously getting to know the investors of that startup so that when he went out to do his own startup, he already had a network built in, right? He had kind of thought a few years ahead, started building relationships with investors, and therefore had a network when it was time to go raise money for his own startup. And so that's another pattern we've seen.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Not every startup is going to go the Sandhill Road pitch deck route. Yep. There are creative ways to raise money out there that we hadn't heard of before or that we weren't taking quite as seriously as before. Non-traditional.
Yeah. Well, you know, crowdfunding obviously is an obvious one that is booming, right? There's been some regulatory changes allowing startups to raise, I think it's like 1.07 million. And then there's another set of regulations, and that's Regulation CF. And then there's another one, don't quote me on all this, but another one allows them to raise $5 million. And so that's obviously become a big deal. We've seen, you know, WeFunder, Republic, StartEngine, there's a dozen of these platforms that have sprouted to help companies raise that. And I think that's an interesting segment if you don't want to go raise money from venture investors, but you have a fan base or a customer base that can write $100, $500 checks, you know, that's a really interesting way to raise money. We're seeing some of these other crazy ideas, or I don't want to say crazy, but more out there ideas like NFTs, right? We had one startup that got on Telegram and they're circulating kind of a white paper and they sold NFTs. And I can't even tell you like how to do that. That's outside my pay grade. But they financed the business by selling, you know, all these NFTs. You've seen SPACs, right, which have sort of come in and out of favor pretty quickly, I would say.
They did come out of favor pretty fast.
So I don't even know if that's a viable option anymore. But for a 12 months or so, you know, you were raising lots of money by doing a SPAC, going public, and then going and finding a company to acquire. So those are a few more alternative methods.
I will be honest, you know, if I heard of a company that, you know, had some non-traditional fundraising and I compare it to a company that, you know, got its first round from Andreessen Horowitz, I think the company from Andreessen Horowitz is going somewhere, you know, that I am naturally just drawn to or perhaps naturally suspicious of, you know, why didn't you do it the traditional way? Do you think that's changing at all?
I think it is changing. However, there's still huge positive signaling by raising money from Andreessen Horowitz, right? Yeah. You've got that stamp of approval that helps you hire, recruit, retain people. I mean, there's a whole bunch of pluses to getting that stamp of approval. I think there was, and maybe still is, a bit of a a negative stigma around companies who crowdfund. Like, hey, that company was not able to go raise money from Andreessen Horowitz. I think that's changing a little bit. I think it's becoming a little more accepted, and that probably will continue. I mean, there's a nice advantage of having 1,000 of your customers also have a equity
and be very enthusiastic, enthusiastic to the point where they'll actually give you money.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Nathan's podcast is How I Raised It. And yeah, the title is an homage to Guy Raz's How I Built This. I recommend both. Next week on Sand Hill Road.
My father was an immigrant from India. And, you know, he's full on American story. Never taught me Hindi. No interest in going back. And I remember when I took the bigger role in Singapore, when I first moved, he said, I can't believe I worked this hard to get to America for you to just go all the way back to Asia. And, you know, it was a laugh. And then he realized I should have taught you Hindi or at least the curse words.
Sheila Patel quits 18 years at Goldman Sachs for the action of Silicon Valley. Next week, she marks 1 year as vice chairman at B Capital. Sandhill Road is produced by Sean Myers under the leadership of Sarah Bueno and Stephanie Adruni. For more interviews with Silicon Valley's most influential entrepreneurs, check me out on TV at Press Here. That's Sunday mornings on NBC Bay Area and everywhere in the world on iTunes and at PressHereTV.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.